This is the first of my revision podcasts for senior pupils studying geography. The first podcast today is about the atmosphere. It's a topic which tends to cause people some concern. If they don't have a scientific bent, then it's an area that causes problems. Now, what I've done is I've produced a series of notes to accompany this podcast, which you can get from my website. If you go through richiecunningham.com, you will find a section on resources, and under senior secondary resources, the atmosphere revision notes. Now, these notes distill down the main components of the topic of the atmosphere, and there are also some exam style questions and even some exam questions which have answers appended to them and have been marked so you can see how examiners would award grades. I've concentrated in this podcast on the sorts of topics that frequently come up in exams. And what I've done is I've cut out sections which are rarely examined, are very, very difficult to examine because of that, they tend to come up very infrequently. So this topic really is a difficult one, and I've concentrated on the areas that most students, if they improve on, will help them to get through the exam. Start today and on with revision for the atmosphere. Atmosphere is a topic that's often taught in the senior school. First of all, we have to think about the atmosphere as a system. The Earth and its atmosphere can be viewed as a closed system, the Earth-atmosphere system, dependent on continuing inputs of energy from the Sun. There are also some very small energy contributions from the Earth's interior, geothermal energy, and obviously some tidal energy. The atmosphere consists of four identifiable layers, the troposphere, stratosphere, mesosphere, and thermosphere. The layers of the atmosphere and how temperature changes within this atmosphere with altitude varying from the ground right up into space can be seen on a diagram on the revision notes. 99% of the atmosphere is made up of two gases, that's nitrogen and oxygen. The troposphere is the lowest layer of the atmosphere. In this layer, where we live and where the weather occurs, temperature generally decreases with altitude. The boundary between the stratosphere and the troposphere is called the tropopause. The jet stream is located at this level, and it marks the highest altitude which can influence the weather. Energy transfers in the atmosphere are also a topic which can be examined regularly. The solar energy which drives the Earth atmosphere system is received and then transformed in a series of energy transfers, most within the atmosphere itself. Some of the solar energy is reflected back into space, around about 25% initially. Some is absorbed, 23%, transformed into heat, and then emitted as long-wave radiation. 52% of the original solar energy finally reaches the Earth's surface. 46% is absorbed and later radiated back into the atmosphere. And a small amount of this is reflected back into space, 6%. So, for every 100 units of energy provided by the Sun, 31 are reflected back into space, 25% by the atmosphere itself initially, and a further 6% by the Earth's surface, while 69% are absorbed by the Earth and its atmosphere. The 31% lost by reflection is termed the Earth's albedo. The maintenance of high temperatures by the atmosphere, allowing in shortwave radiation and trapping the bulk of the outgoing longwave radiation, is sometimes called the greenhouse effect. It is the enhancement of this greenhouse effect from increases in carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, which trap more outgoing heat that cause so much concern at present as global temperatures rise. The global heat budget really is all about the input of energy and the output. Basically, if there is no human interference with the atmosphere, the Earth as a planet would not be getting hotter or colder. Now, of the 46%, and we call it 46 units for ease of reference, of the solar energy which reaches the Earth's surface, 14 units are re-radiated as long-wave radiation, 7 into space directly and 7 into the atmosphere, 10 units are returned to the atmosphere by conduction, and 22 units are transferred by latent heat. Conduction is the transfer of heat between the Earth's surface and the atmosphere that it's in contact with. However, only the lowest portion of the atmosphere is warmed in this way, as air is a very poor conductor. Transfer by latent heat is where water is evaporated at the Earth's surface, rises in the atmosphere, and transfers heat energy as it condenses. Of the 46 units of energy received at the Earth's surface, 39 units are transferred to the Earth's atmosphere. The atmosphere receives most of its energy from the Earth's surface. The most significant aspect of the Earth's heat budget is that the atmosphere is largely heated from below. Over 99% of all energy in this Earth atmosphere system comes from the sun. 46% warms the sea and land, while 22% powers the global hydrological cycle. Now, the idea of a heat budget is that all of the energy received is eventually lost, and it's lost in different ways. So that's the budget. It has to balance. Energy input in equals energy output lost. Global insulation, that's the energy received from the sun, heats the atmosphere and oceans. Most energy is received in the equatorial regions. The wind and the ocean circulation redistribute some of this energy from the equatorial to polar regions. Because the Earth is spherical, the sun's radiation, that's the insulation, only strikes the Earth's surface at the perpendicular between the tropics of Cancer and Capricorn. The further away from the tropics, the larger the surface area hit by the same amount of solar radiation. And therefore, surface heating is much less. Also, the sun's radiation has to pass through more of the atmosphere before it reaches the surface of the Earth because of the oblique angle it is hitting the angle at. This reduces the heating further. Differences in global insulation help to explain the variation and distribution of temperatures over the globe. There are also energy transfers at the horizontal level between low latitudes and high latitudes. Forward of latitude 38 degrees in both hemispheres, there is less solar energy absorbed than terrestrial energy emitted. Whereas between 38 north and 38 south, there is more energy absorbed than emitted. Energy is transferred from the low latitudes, the surplus areas, to the high latitudes, the energy deficient areas. Without this transfer of energy, low latitudes will get increasingly hotter, and high latitudes even colder. This movement of energy is where we start to look at global circulation. The simple three-cell model of atmospheric circulation, proposed by Ferret, included the tropical Hadley cell. That's where rising equatorial air and descending air at the subtropics round about 30 degrees latitude. This cell also includes air movement at ground level between the subtropics and the equator to replace the rising equatorial air, which has created a zone of low pressure. This area of low pressure is caused by the deeper air at the equator, which expands, less dense or heavy, and rises. As the heated air rises through the atmosphere, the weight of the air on the surface is lessened, and this results in a low pressure area. Differences in air pressure create movement for wind. In this case, the wind moves from high pressure subtropics to low pressure equatorial zone. As water vapor condenses, it releases energy, and as the air moves poleward, it warms the atmosphere in the middle latitudes. The poleward moving air subsides or sinks in the subtropics because the space available in the upper atmosphere decreases poleward. This causes a subtropical high pressure zone at about 30 degrees latitude. A polar cell in this model is due to cold, dense air subsiding in polar regions, a polar high pressure zone, and moving to low latitudes where it expands as it moves into more space and is warmed by the sun. The Ferrel cell between the two is a response to the two thermally direct cells. This cell feeds warm air to high latitudes and transfers cold air back to the subtropics for warming. Now this three-cell model is a useful simplification of reality, but very much a simplification. Improvements in atmospheric circulation models have happened in the 20th and 21st centuries. The existence of large-scale belts of fast-moving winds, these belts following a wave-like pattern, firstly forward, then towards the equator and so on, these wave-like patterns are known as planetary waves or Rossby waves, and occur at altitudes of 10,000 to 12,000 metres. Now within these wind belts there is a core of very fast-moving air, the jet stream, where the wind can reach speeds of up to 350 to 450 kilometres an hour. There are two jet streams in each hemisphere. The polar jet stream lies between 30 and 50 degrees latitude, and the subtropical jet stream about 20 to 30 degrees latitude. These jet streams are generated by the temperature differences between polar and subtropical air, and between subtropical and equatorial air. The polar jet stream is the most vigorous because the temperature difference between polar and subtropical air is more marked than the difference between subtropical and equatorial air. In 1951, Palman added the jet stream and other modifications, for example, a polar front, to the three-cell model. And that's the model that tends to be used as a general simplification of global circulation. When we look at planetary wind circulation, the major wind systems largely conform to broad latitudinal zones. There are two main wind belts in each hemisphere. The trade wind belt covers nearly half the Earth's surface and is found between latitudes 30 degrees north and 30 degrees south. The trade winds are fairly constant and predictable because of the relative permanence of the subtropical high pressure zones from where they emanate. The second major wind belt in each hemisphere is the mid-latitude westerlies, which develop from the poleward sides of the subtropical high pressure zone. The trade winds from both hemispheres meet near the equator in what is called the intertropical convergence zone. The intertropical convergence zone moves between the tropics with a seasonal shift as the equatorial low pressure moves. Because this zone is an area of convection or uplift today, the winds are weaker and are called the doldrums. In general, land surfaces heat faster and to a higher level than water surfaces. However, land surfaces cool faster and reach a lower temperature when solar energy is absent. Oceans cool at a slower rate, because the heat is dispersed through some depth. So they act as a store of energy. The temperature range over large landmasses tend to therefore be greater than over large areas of water. 2/3 of the Earth's surface is water, and this receives 2/3 of the sun's insulation. Therefore, the redistribution of energy from the equator to the poles by the ocean is fairly significant. Ocean currents are the mechanism for this exchange of energy. Ocean currents are largely produced by temperature differences and energy transfer from wind to water. Winds over the ocean surface also drag surface water. Density differences can also produce swollen ocean waters, as can salinity. In the tropics, equatorial rainfall reduces salinity of the water, while in the drier subtropics, evaporation is greater than rainfall and hence increased salinity. High salinity water tends to subside, and on the surface, a current tends to flow from areas of low salinity and high salinity. One of the interesting features about our ocean currents is below a latitude of about 30 degrees, the west coast of continents have contact with cold currents, for example, the Canaries Current and the California Current, whereas the east coast are in contact with warm currents, the Gulf Stream and the Brazil Current. Above about latitude 45 degrees, the positions are reversed with the west coasts in contact with warm currents, for example, the North Atlantic Drift, and east coasts in contact with cold currents, e.g. Kamchatka and Labrador currents. Ocean currents can have a significant impact on climate. For example, the United Kingdom was its relatively mild winters and ice-free waters to the North Atlantic Drift, which is an extension of the Gulf Stream. This warm current keeps the average January temperature in Valentia, that's Western Ireland, at around about 7 degrees Celsius, while on a similar latitude in Tomsk in central Russia, it tends to be around minus 21 degrees Celsius. Air masses tend to be named by the source area they come from. The source area for air masses are usually places where surface geography is fairly uniform, such as over deserts, oceans, large plains, and ice-covered areas. Air which is slow-moving or gently subsiding over these areas can acquire uniform temperature and humidity characteristics. These large volumes of air with relatively uniform characteristics are called air masses. As air masses move, they change. An air mass moving equatorward from the poles is heated in its lower layers. This makes the air unstable because the temperature gradient is steep and convective cloud is likely to develop. Conversely, air moving poleward is cooled in the lowest layers, lessening the temperature gradient and making the lower air more stable. I mentioned the intertropical convergence zone earlier, and this is an area where air masses and their convergence is of particular interest. The intertropical convergence zone is where the trade winds converge. It's an area of uplift of air. The air that converges on the intertropical convergence zone does not have the differences in temperature and density that are typical of convergence at the polar front, and therefore there are no weather fronts. Maritime tropical air can be drawn over the land, but when the source region is a dry continental area, this continental tropical air is dry an area. And this sort of conflict between maritime tropical and continental tropical air is played out over the west coast of Africa on an annual basis, and it's an interesting example of convergence at the intertropical convergence zone. From January to July, the intertropical convergence zone moves northwards across West Africa, bringing cloudy, humid conditions. This moist air gives rise to little rainfall in its northern edge, where it meets a dry, subsiding continental tropical air from the Sahara Desert. The intertropical buffer zone doesn't migrate much over the ocean, but over land, the position tends to reflect the latitude of maximum insolation. The climate of the Sahel, this area borders on the southern Sahara, has been variable over the last 100 years. Runs of dry or wet years are part of the natural variability of the Sahel climate. However, the length of regional drought is now statistically significant and points to the region going through climatic change, which will lead to a southward extension of the Sahara Desert. In my atmosphere revision booklet, I have provided some exam-style questions. And these questions cover things such as planetary circulation, wind belts. Also, I look at movement of the intertropical convergence zone over West Africa. And, of course, ocean currents. And there's also a question about air masses and their influence on weather. In addition to that, I have provided an exam-style question and a typical answer, and I have put ticks beside each point that is relevant, so it gives you an idea of how many marks a candidate can get. I looked at the solar insulation and wind belts. And there are two questions which have been marked and give people an idea of exactly what examiners are looking for in this type of question.